We have an agenda, just one. So we're looking at the report of the Guardian's Fund and the Master's Office. DJ, we are in your hands. Let me welcome you and your team. Thank you very much.
The honorable member, as well as the chair. Mayor? My voice is not carrying that well. Thank you. The presentation that we will focus on in broad terms, even before I get to the document, is we'll be focusing on the Guardian Fund, we'll be focusing on the historic developments in the Guardian Fund, the interventions that we are currently putting in place. We'll also be dealing with the levels of service that the Guardian Fund is offering and what we intend doing as we move forward. We'll also deal with the issues related to the master's broader environment in the presentation.
Do you want to introduce us to your people?
Oh.
I think you do know us, the site.
My apologies, Chair. I forgot. Chair, may I request that my colleagues introduce themselves? I apologize.
Chair Nicholson Armland, Director of Third Party Funds from the Department.
Husband Divier, Chief Operations Officer.
Good morning, Joanne Johnson, Chief Director of Budget, but we've been assigned to manage Guardian Funds going forward. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Lester Boston. I'm the Acting Chief Master.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And again, my apologies.
Can we ask the Chief Master where he was?
I'll cover that in the presentation, but let me perhaps, whilst the issue is still warm, the position has been advertised more than once. We've headhunted, we have shortlisted, we didn't find the right sort of level of candidates. Yesterday, we went through that process, a second level process with the minister and the deputy minister. We have concluded that maybe what we are looking for is slightly different to how we had advertised the position over time. And so we are rescoping, just looking at the overall turnaround of the masters. But this does not preclude those candidates that had applied. If they still meet the requirements, we will then put them in the process. Thank you. The Guardian Fund, we will provide brief history. So the Guardian Fund is a statutory trust established in terms of Chapter 5 of the Administration of Estates Act of 1965. Its primary purpose, as members would know, is to protect and manage monies belonging to persons who are deemed legally incapable or lacking the capacity to manage their own affairs. And I think that has not changed over years, and I think it's unlikely to change as we move forward, because people who lack capacity will always need the master as the highest guardian for those people. Mm-hmm. Currently, the Guardian Fund has representation in six offices, namely Pretoria, Cape Town, Pietermaritzburg, Grahamstown, Bloemfontein, as well as in Kimberley. Perhaps just to digress a bit on this point is that the services that are offered, if we see the representation and the demand of services as we go through the presentation, you will realize that this representation falls far short from where we ought to be, and therefore the interventions that we will be talking about much later. Some of the functions, and these are not all the functions, but some of the functions are to receive and process inheritances that are submitted to us, and make the necessary payments to beneficiaries who are entitled thereto. We, in the process of discharging that responsibility, we also invest monies with the PIC, given the fact that we can't be sitting with large volumes of cash in our environment. And we also have to make some interest for the beneficiaries so that their money grow in the process, even though that is not our primary function. The interest calculated in respect of monies received is the interest that goes to beneficiaries, as you will see later in the presentation. The financial management response for the Guardian Fund in particular, the department has always had accounting obligations for the Guardian Fund. And one of the critical areas was for us to improve governance of the fund over the many years that we've been managing it. The committee will know that we've always had challenges in terms of capacity, in terms of resources in managing the Guardian Fund. So in response to those challenges, and which resulted, and the presentation will show later, it resulted in many disclaimers and ultimately qualifications, and we are now on the Guardian Fund at least, not being qualified this year and the past 2 to 3 years. So, but that arose because we mobilized a whole range of resources and expertise to an institute at a number of projects to assist in the turnaround of the Guardian Fund. And that turnaround was, amongst others, in the financial environment, the accounting environment, but also in the service delivery environment, as well as the systems environment, as the presentation will show later. From September 2006, a multi-skilled project team was directed at addressing, amongst others, the procedural challenges that we were experiencing at that time. And some of those challenges were related to staff, the numbers in terms of capacity in relation to the growing demand, as well as capacity in terms of skills in relation, again, to the growing demand. We wanted to address issues of non-compliance with legislation which had resulted in the number of disclaimers that we had received. We wanted to address issues of errors in accounting and the backlogs that we're facing. We wanted to address the processing of backlogs in terms of just giving service to the beneficiaries and enabling them to participate in the economy with the money we pay over to them. And finally, we wanted to facilitate, amongst others, a complete systems rollout in that environment. Now, the issues relating to some of the limitations we were having were related to the number of disclaimers that I've already alluded to. And since 2006 and 2007, we started experiencing some of the progress in that environment. 7 and 8, we had an unqualified audit report. 8 and 9, unqualified, and 9 and 10, unqualified, and we're hoping to continue in the trend. But I must, whilst I'm still at this level, indicate that it doesn't mean that the auditors have not raised issues. We are addressing the issues the auditors have raised, but obviously the Office of the Auditor General keeps raising the bar in terms of standards of accounting, and we believe it is doing the right thing, so we will try to meet the bar as it is being raised in the process. The accounting challenges that we have experienced, amongst others, include staff capacity constraints, skills, inadequate accounting systems, evolving financial accounting standards, as well as explosive growth in the fund size. Again, I just want to deal with the third bullet, the inadequate accounting skills. The committee will know that we've always been talking about JDAS, JDAS 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we've been using JDAS to account under these circumstances. The challenge with JDAS, as we've said before, is that it's an IT system designed to do everything else, but it's never been designed to be a financial system. So insofar as rolling out some of the services, the challenge with that system is that it has not enabled us to balance the rolling out of services with the accounting for those services. just to give the committee a history, a very limited history of the surpluses that we've received over the years, and I'll speak slightly later on these surpluses. In 2006 and 7, we had a surplus of 65.1 million. The following year, 107 million. The following year, 48 million. And you will see that there was a huge decline in the surpluses, as well as in 9 and 10, we had 119 million. If I speak very briefly to 8 and 9, and in case there are questions as to why we had a drop there, there are a number of reasons, but the key reasons relating to the drop was the interest rates decline at that point. So the monies that we had invested, we were not receiving the same level of interest that we were receiving in the previous 2 years. So that is the one reason. But the other reason was that in terms of our investment strategy for this fund, we pay at a set interest rate level, which is 7.5. So we decided that we were not going to do a cut, even though we thought about it, we engaged on it, but we decided we were not going to reduce the interest rate payment of 7.5% that we are doing, given the fact that we still had surplus funds during the relevant period. Just to then give the committee the investment indication of the investment strategy and how we have applied the investment strategy. First and foremost, we start on the basis that we've adopted a very conservative investment strategy on the understanding that the monies we are investing are not our monies. We are holding these monies in trust, and therefore there is a fiduciary duty on us not to be over elaborate in terms of investing in all sorts of instruments that are high risk instruments. What we also have been considering, amongst others, is the growth of volumes in terms of the transactions that we are paying out. We do not want to get to a position where we are totally illiquid, and therefore short-term investment enables us, in the event we were ever called upon to make these payments, that we are liquid at all times. So we have monies that are invested between the range of 0 to 3 months, 3 to 6, 6 to 9, 9 to 12. The last level, which is the level of 1 to 3 years, the last level related to 1 to 3 years is a level that we have to constantly consider in terms of whether we need to keep money at that level, invested at that level, or not. So it's an ongoing review as we move forward. Just to indicate to the committee, we invest monies with PIC, and PIC has been giving us advice on the growth path of the investments, as well as on where it is best appropriate to invest these monies. But in addition, we have had to employ a consultant to assist us with a consulting company to assist us with the investment in the development of the investment strategy. And that consulting company is Alexander Forbes. They are experts in the area, and they assisted us with the development of the investment strategy, which we have been employing over a period of time. In the event that the issues around what do we pay them relative to what we make, we pay them hourly. We are not currently using them. They are on retainer, so we pay them as and when they've given us advice from time to time, so that they are not constantly on our payroll. The volumes in terms of monies we receive from the in the management process of we have three categories, and let me just talk to the committee around these categories. The monies that we receive, which we invest at interest and we pay out at interest, where you see commission, I'm just trying to explain this because we don't explain it in the presentation. Where you see commission, This is in respect of creditors. We don't pay out interest on creditors. And then the last line, which is entitled no interest, it's money that, in terms of the Act, when a person reaches an age of majority, after 5 years of reaching the age of majority, we no longer pay interest on those monies if they are still kept with us. We pay up to age of majority plus 5 years. Beyond that, we don't. So that's why we've categorized these monies in that way. Members will see a steady growth in terms of these monies that we receive, 644,000 in 2007, 682 in 2008 and 9, and 982 in 9 and 10. And I think even this year we will be recording a growth. So the first layer deals with volumes amount in terms of what we receive from the beneficiaries. The second level deals with volume, numbers of transactions, numbers of cases that we deal with. In 2007 and 2008, we dealt with 13,811 transactions. The following year, there were 12,330. The following year, there were 15,285 of receipts which we would have had to pay interest on. On commission, that is a small portion of the money throughout, because we have very few creditors who do not claim their money on time. The numbers are there for the members to see. We've also indicated the previous information in these graphs. The blue color represents transactions that we do, and the red color represents the payment for those transactions, as you can see them there. What perhaps members will be looking at is we had growth, which peaked at 9% in 2005 and 2006. It declined and then moved up, and we are almost leveling at 9 and 10, and there's a reason for that. The reason for that is that when the age of majority was reduced from 21 to 18 years, there was a huge peak in terms of claims that we had to pay at a particular period. That peak is beginning to level itself out at the stage where we are now. Let's then deal with volumes and in particular values of payments that we've made. We were talking about receipts in the previous slides, and we are now talking about payments relative to those receipts. At interest rate, payments that we have to pay interest on, in 2007 and 2008, we paid 522,000. Million. Sorry. And then the next, the 2008 and 2009, it was 724 million. The following year, 734 million. In respect of commissions, the figures are there. You will see that there is a remarked drop in the commissions, and it seems as if people are collecting sooner than they were before. At no interest, again, you will see that the figures have dropped in year 2009 to 2010 and hopefully up to 2011. The volumes, again, the volumes of these transactions are growing 47,000, 52, as well as 52. The following year, which was 09 or 10. We represent again the graphical representation of the slide before, the number of beneficiaries as well as the number of payments. So the receipts is reflected in blue as well as the payments reflected in red. The question may be from the committee, why is there a distinction or a difference between the line of the receipts of money relative to what we pay? Why is there a difference? There is a clear difference, but there's a clear explanation for that. When we receive money, we still have to verify the beneficiaries, ensure that we pay the right people, ensure that we track beneficiaries. Beneficiaries may not change, but the what is this right word? The caregivers, the caretakers, sometimes change from time to time when beneficiaries lose family members. So that's what accounts for the difference between the time we receive the money and the actual payout. And the other issue that accounts for that difference is that when we receive the money, we receive it roughly in lump sum, but when we pay it out, we don't pay out always in lump sum payments. And that's what accounts for the difference. Now, I spoke about the investment strategy a little earlier. In the investment strategy that we are currently employing in the department, we are investing at a return of 8.5%. Members will recall that I said we pay at 7.5%. So there's 1% differential, which members would be interested to know where that money goes. We don't use it for the department necessarily. What we do is that money goes towards reserves, basically, which we clear out at the end of the year and we pay over to the National Revenue Fund. The idea there is that if we are ever in trouble and the economic situation of the country changes so materially, what this allows us is a window of opportunity for the revenue fund then to make good of all the monies we've been paying over the years. Luckily, we have not found ourselves in that position with the Guardian Fund yet. There is a very big growth in the Guardian Fund, 15% growth translated in 770 million, which we are seeing. And what that growth means, it means three things in the main. One, it means we need to pay people even faster because we can't keep this money. It must go out there and enable people to receive these benefits for their money. The second issue is that it means we must deal with our own ability in the department in terms of capacity and everything to pay this money accurately and very quickly. But the third issue is that it means we must have the right systems to account for this growth because the level at which the fund is growing, if we're not careful about those three things, we will lose. Of course, the other things I'm not talking about are the soft issues around training and all those issues which we must also deal with in terms of accounting for this growth. The next thing, bullet then deals with the system that we are using. We are borrowing as much as we are able to the concepts from the Department of Home Affairs in terms of verification of beneficiaries as well as verification of caregivers. We are using this system. It has been rolled out in most of the master's offices, the six footprints, but the sixth one is still, we are 8% in the verification process, and that is Pretoria. As I've indicated, we have been receiving unqualified audits, but as I've indicated clearly, the auditors are raising a bar, justifiably so, and they are pushing us to our limits in terms of bringing efficiencies in this environment. There are service delivery issues which I thought would be necessary that the committee is sees and is presented to the committee. And some of these service delivery issues just relate to growth. We are servicing more people than we have ever serviced in the past however many years of the existence of the Guardian Fund. And that growth, I don't think we've grown ourselves as a department relative to the growth in demand. And it's a good thing that we are trialing in growing the our ability and capacity to manage the fund. But South Africans who are beneficiaries here expect us to rise to the challenge and meet that growth in terms of services that we should be offering. The current system that we have in place enables us at this stage to start dealing with this growth, but the human capacity side, we are not there yet. The second level is that we've doubled from 2008 to 2010, we've doubled the service delivery in terms of payouts because of the changes in the age of majority. The third point deals with how much did we pay last year. In fact, last year and the year before, we paid 754, and I just wanted to verify the year before, it was also 764. So the 764 million in the previous year and 754 million in the past financial year. Now, that is the money that is the, that is being paid out there to the beneficiaries. I've already explained the last bullet in terms of just cushioning the impact of the economic downturn on beneficiaries. So what we do is we recognize that our interest rates fluctuate a lot, but we try and keep a cushion and try and pay the 7.5% consistently over a period. It doesn't mean we don't review. We still review if there is a huge interest rate shift. Just on the overall deceased estates, curatorships, trust insolvencies, we just wanted to share with the committee the growth in those areas, the growth of services, as well as where are these growth in services felt more. The first one is obviously Johannesburg, and which you can see Johannesburg is a full service environment. We offer all services there. Pretoria as well, which is all the metropoles, we also offer full services in Pretoria, Cape Town, as well as I think in Durban. Pietermaritzburg. I come from Durban. Excuse my bias towards Durban. Then the rest, the services that we offer fluctuate. But I just thought let's do a year-on-year comparison. In 2008, if you compare 2008 to 2009 in Johannesburg, we had 28,000 in under the deceased estates. We had 28,000, and then the following year we had 34,000. That's a massive growth. Curator services, we had 120, and then the following year there was a decline in curator services. In trust, in fact, generally in trust, we are seeing a huge decline in trust. I think people are losing interest in the trust, and part of it is probably because of changes in the legislation and the tax and all of those other issues. And then in insolvencies, that's another area we need to watch out, because a lot of companies and people are struggling financially, and so we are seeing a lot of growth in the insolvencies as well, compared to the previous period in terms of performance. So these growth in numbers are the numbers that are challenging us as a department, and in particular the master's environment, to do better all times, and for us to ensure that we invest in the right systems to meet the demand that we are seeing. We did one slide just to show you, because before we were just indicating the financial year growth. So we've just decided to indicate to the committee the deceased estates registered from period 1 January 2010 to September 2010. This is real-time information, and maybe before I even go to the slide, I must indicate this. Our IT system in the overall department, we are improving on them, of course, on a regular basis. But in the master's office, I think that's where we are beginning to see real value because of real-time reporting and real-time information. And whilst it's a very expensive investment to make, we are saying that this investment, we need to make more of it. Just perhaps a slight digression. When we were asking Treasury for additional money, the key critical component of those monies will go towards IT investment, because we really want in all our business to see real-time growth, just like we are seeing real-time growth. If we had a bit of time, we will show you real-time reporting that we are beginning to get in the master's office. But there's a lot that goes to it before we get to this point. Again, this slide will give the committee an indication of growth. If you see, Johannesburg again is the highest, Pretoria, Cape Town, as well as Durban, you see the highest growth levels there. In this slide, we picked the period 2008 and 2009 because that we have a complete set of figures. Again, here we are representing, we are giving you a slightly different indication of growth as well as, so in the deceased estates, there was a huge growth from 167,000 to 180,000. In curator services, there was a growth of 750 to 791, whilst in trust, we are seeing a decline from 19,000 to 17,000, as well as in insolvencies, we are seeing a huge growth between 8,000 to 14,000. And this slide then indicates the comparison of deceased estates over a period. And when we are saying comparison, we are just talking comparison in terms of values as well as numbers. So what we are saying, if you go to the first line, the first line indicates the estates that are less than that are less than 125,000. Which are defined. We define them in that way for performance purposes. There are at least 137,000 cases. Of those cases, all of them put together, the total value is only 23 million. So a lot of people are sitting in that. Sorry. Yes. sorry about that. The average rent value is 23,000. So each of those little estates, ultimately, out of the 137,000 cases, of those, the value of those estates are 23,000. The next level is estates of above 125, but below. Well, of above 625, but below a million. Again, there you have 19,000 cases. The values of those estates individually the values of those estates average 325,000. The next level, so these are the comparisons that we are trying to indicate to you where is the biggest pool of people that we are servicing. Just from a service delivery point of view. This is the biggest pool of people we are servicing, which is the first level because of the numbers, as you can see. They have the smallest estate, but they are the biggest number. The next level is a slightly bigger estate, but they are a bigger number as well, comparatively speaking. The smallest number of people we are servicing are those with the biggest estates. Their estates range from 4 million to 5 million, and the total number there of cases is 384. So if you compare 384 total number of cases to 137, you will see that our margin in terms of the majority of the work that we do in the first two categories. Yes, in this level, there are lesser people, but because their estates are generally more complicated, we take a bit of time in dealing with them. Now, we wanted just to give members some of the key performance areas that link us back to the strategy. We said in the Guardian Fund, over the period of time, the Guardian Fund, we were paying within 60 days. And what we've set a target for ourselves to reduce the 60 days down to 40 days. And for now, we have been meeting the 40 days. And it looks like we are projecting that we will meet the 40 days throughout the period. Something will have to go very wrong for us not to meet the 40-day payment period. So that is more on the Guardian Fund side. On the deceased estate side, there are two targets. The first one is we finalize the matters within of less than 125,000 within 4 months. Again, there we are on target, generally speaking. And then on matters above 125,000, we said we are going to finalize them within 12 months, and again, there we remain on target. But I must indicate, when I've just said this, I must indicate to the members that we have two offices in the Guardian Fund environment. The Pretoria office carries the most volumes. And those volumes, I think, range in about for Pretoria, it's 2.2 billion or thereabouts. Pietermaritzburg is the second highest with 1.9 billion. So when we are talking about the Guardian Fund, we must also bear that in mind, that these are the types of volumes that we are talking about. We wanted to track where are we with the complaints that have been raised in the presidential hotline. We are on track because we've met and resolved all these complaints. The question that the committee may be asking itself is, did we resolve them within the required period? Certainly at complaints level, not within the required period, but we've resolved all of them nonetheless. What we want to do is to try and give ourselves better benchmarks around the management of the presidential hotline. But I wanted to give an indication of what are we getting from the presidential hotline. We've segmented it. Inquiries of just people who are interested in knowing or wanting to find out how to proceed in either in how to process or access the Guardian Fund, how to deal with those processes. The inquiries, we are sitting at 54 in number. But on the complaints side, we are sitting at 40. What we want to do is we want to monitor that and see if we are improving on this as we move forward. But this information, earlier I spoke about real-time reporting. This information is corroborated right now by our IT system, which tells us that the biggest hit when people go into our website, the biggest hit of the questions that we receive amounting to plus minus 33,000 inquiries are on the Guardian Fund and on these services. So I think this is consistent, therefore, with that. This is just a graphical representation of that information. We then deal with the challenges. And of course, we have more challenges than the ones we've depicted here, but let me just highlight some of the challenges. We said earlier we have 6 footprint offices in the country that are full service Guardian Fund, master's office in nationwide or countrywide. What we've since done is, because these services are required almost on a daily basis by people everywhere, we've grown the processing and environment into 402 magisterial courts. So there you can still go and apply and have these services rendered. So the location was an inconvenience, but we are finding creative ways of improving on that, so in improving proper service delivery. On the accommodation, there are challenges. We are struggling with accommodation. We are being chased out left, right, and center, but we are managing that issue. Cost of accommodation is really, really huge for us as a department now, not just focusing on the master's component. But obviously, it does affect us because the master's component has a number of people there. We are beginning to also see that we relocate very often because of our lease environment and arrangements with public works. We haven't done any research on that, but it does affect beneficiaries. When they last met with you, you are servicing them from point A, and in 5 years' time you've moved and you are at a different environment. And I think we are watching out for that, and we are trying to see what creative ways can we put in place to address that. The organizational structure, and I think the question that was raised earlier, I would like to again reiterate my response to that. We have a number of vacant posts that are in the master's environment, which we are closing, but they remain there. The key post that is a big worry for us is the post of the chief master, because the sooner we have that, the better. As I've indicated, we've gone through the advertisement, the shortlisting, we've done that at least twice, and we are now changing tact, basically, in redesigning the job spec so that we probably will find a different response. because of what I had indicated earlier in terms of growth and in terms of which offices are experiencing most growth, we need to move people as well to follow the growth, because sometimes we have people that are less busy than others, and that is a risk in itself. So we are right-sizing at every appropriate opportunity. On the issue of the communication around the master's services, I think we have not done a great job. There is information on the website, which we should have brought booklets for the members. We will do that when we come here next time. But we are doing that on our website. However, most South Africans, especially in that high-level category of people with estates of about 23,000, most of those people do not have access to the internet, and we have to find a better way of reaching people and communicating our services to the South Africans. The issue of building capacity, I can repeat it more than I have. I can only add, just on building capacity, the level of training. We've had intense training from the Justice College. We will continue to have that intense training so that people are trained and can do the basic things. The master's environment, just a broad environment. We are saying we are focusing on our core business of servicing the South Africans. We are supporting primarily the vulnerable people who need those resources. We are trying as best as we can to comply with the legislative prescripts, which is why we've seen a move from being disclaimed to qualified, from qualified to unqualified. But we are also focusing now on more service-driven delivery. And then we share our services as much as we are able to within the Guardian Fund environment. Of course, there will always be opportunities to reform legislation, which we must bring to Parliament whenever we identify that, identify policies that need amendment and upgrading, as well as tighten up on procedures and directives. In terms of stakeholder management, because I think for us, we have stakeholders in terms of the beneficiaries, but we also have stakeholders in terms of organizations. Starting from the last bullet, NGOs and community-based organizations are people that really, really depend on the information and that we should be communicating with the most. Social welfare entities, banks and trusts, of course, that we bank with. Legal Aid South Africa, we recently entered into an arrangement where Legal Aid South Africa is now giving assistance not only to the traditional legal aid mandate, but also to the beneficiaries of the Guardian Fund. And we think this is big for us, as well as our other key stakeholders, obviously, who are very primary, our legal and accounting profession. Small highlights that we've achieved over the past few years. Again, it's the increase in the number of people we are servicing. We are not turning anybody away. And we have the cooperation agreement with LASA, which opens a new window of opportunity in terms of fast-tracking our services. The ICMS rollout that I said, for now in the master's office, we can see real-time reports. Obviously, we have to improve on that. But that has been rolled out in 402 service points countrywide. Compared to what we had
integrated case management system.
Sorry, my apologies.
Integrated case management system.
It's an IT system that enables us to report. And my apology for not have cited that in full.
LASA
is the Legal Aid Board, Legal Aid South Africa, which is the Legal Aid Board in common terms. Then members will recall that we had Project Operation Sigile, which, amongst others, was rolling out those services because of what I had indicated earlier, our limited reach. We had identified during that period that we would roll out the project to 16 areas which were identified, and I may just quickly read them out. It's Newcastle, Mbangeni, Port Shepstone, Nelspruit, Witbank, Butterworth, Mount Alice, Pusatichaba, Welcome, Soweto, Kwanobuhle, NPE, Bushbuck Ridge, Klerksdorp, Tembisa, Vereeniging, and East London. We've covered those already. But we've also increased our reach, as I've indicated, to 402 service points. So from 16 to 402 service points. And it's a huge growth by anybody's standards. And then, of course, I spoke earlier about the online verification process. What we are trying to keep ourselves in check about is to ensure that that verification, once we have it, that information is not corrupted, which is also another challenge of having information in the system and protecting it. So our security system in terms of IT security has got to be top. We wanted just to give an indication using the Pietermaritzburg. You'd recall that I said Pietermaritzburg is the second largest in the master in the Guardian Fund portfolio. And these are current calendar year figures, current financial year figures. From March, we paid 17.9 million. In fact, it's 17.97 million. And the number of transactions is 894. In April, the transactions grew 948. We paid 43 million. In May, the transactions grew 1,049. We paid 29.87 million. In June, the transactions grew but declined compared to the previous 3 months. Declined a bit, but we paid 14 million. And then in July, the transactions declined a bit. At 902, we paid 20 million. The biggest decline has been in August, and we can attribute there was slowness between June, July, and August. And it's Soccer World Cup as well as salary negotiations and the strike. So we are beginning to see the impact in August. It's likely to be worse perhaps in September. We probably will pick up in October. We just wanted to give members that indication. So if you look at just the total values for Maritzburg alone of what we are paying a lot of money up there. And these payments we are releasing energy into the market for beneficiaries of these monies. Even when you are looking at just numbers of people we've paid from March to August, those numbers are big, big, big numbers. It's not without complaints, though, and I must indicate. But when we look at complaints, we try and close as many complaints as we are able to, but we have to keep looking at the bigger picture and not let complaints hold us back, because sometimes they can hold you back when you are trying to chase the levels of service, the delivery of service. What we are very mindful of as this team is this, that the one person who complains is the one person who has not received a service. And they feel as bad, if not worse, compared to any one of the people that we would have served very well. And therefore, we are very mindful of that. The matters that we register per day, we just thought we'll share this information again with the honorable members. January this year, 714, February, 832, March, 757, April, 767, May, 874, June, 886, July, 915, and there again you see the drop in the matters that we received in August. The last slide, I'm very blind, so I'm going to request my colleague, Mr. Basson, to take the committee through the last slide.
So is it my understanding that you can't read color red? Is it?
It's not an admission, but something like that.
Yeah. to the committee, Chair. We wanted to find out more or less how relevant is the Master's Office in terms of economic activity. The figures that we are talking about is the value of assets. If somebody passes away with R1 million assets, we would say that we have dealt with R1 million in terms of this slide. It is not cash handled by the master. This is economic impact. We have looked at the number of estates, and it's just for January and February of 2010. It's just a focused 2 months that we did this detailed analysis. We saw in that 2 months, 22,000 people passed away, leaving an average gross asset value of 24,000, and that amounted to 500 million in terms of activity. Then we saw 3,099 people passed away, leaving an average value of 329,000 rand, but it amounted to R1 billion. And so the figures rolls down. Ultimately, we dealt with those 4.9 billion in 2 months. That gives you a daily average of 124 million. And since we've started this session to now, another 15 million has passed through the master's offices in terms of economic reality. Some of the analysis is also to see where, if I may call it wealth, is located. You will find that on the last line, 68 people had 300 million, but 22,000 people had 500 million. It's just the disparities between the realities that we see. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. And this slide links with the earlier slide that I had spoken about in terms of where wealth is overall in South Africa. You have the high level bracket and the low level bracket. The high level bracket being most activity, the least estate. The lowest level being the least, the highest level of estate, and the lower level of activity. And Chair, I think that's where we take this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG, and thank you for a very good presentation. And it seems that things are improving dramatically from a management perspective. I've got a number of issues, Chair, you might have to stop me, but first of all, well done on the unqualified audit reports. Continue. That's a very good issue. But I first want to touch on the issue of 80% of your cases in the master's office are the 125,000 Section 18C estates. Now, the Law Reform Commission in August of 2008 indicated that these are problematic and urgent safeguards are required to protect beneficiaries in these estates. I'm sure you're aware of that. The minister accepted that. Well, we see from your figures, 137,000 cases, average value of 23,000. Have sufficient steps been put in place to protect your vulnerable minors, particularly where you've got this relatively informal process with the 18-3 estates that I've always supported, but it seems that there could be a problem there, and I just want an indication. Secondly, the issue of liquidations. It's increasing substantially from your report. If you take Johannesburg, and that's an indication of the economic recession. Joburg, 1558, it's doubled to 3172. Pretoria, 5207, almost doubled to 9168. How does one monitor liquidators' performance and the fees of the liquidators? And I remember a few years ago there was a lot of discussion. One doesn't want to mention names, but I think around a person, Enver Matala or something, there were investigations. I might be wrong. I stand corrected. And there's a dispute in Cape Town relating Kloppe versus the High Court on that. So it's an issue around liquidations. Thirdly, the issue of the Law Society and the Chief Master's Directive, has that been attended to? Streamlining procedures to deal with the examination of the liquidation and distribution accounts, where the Law Society said it's imperative that such a directive be issued as soon as possible, if you're aware of that. And then on your investment, how do you achieve a 8.5% return? Please help me, I'd like to invest with the PIC, because that is very good in the present economic conditions. And I see it's almost 6 billion rand, so it is a major, major impact. And in fact, this is my very last issue, relates to the issue of extent of the losses through theft and fraud in the Guardian's office. We had a situation in Bloemfontein where the public protector brought out a finding on that 81,000 rand check. How is it possible that people are able to cash those checks, which are marked not negotiable? And if a person cashes them, you have a right of recourse against the instance that cashes that check. So I'd like you to follow up on those, because I know those checks are marked not negotiable, and therefore they cannot be cashed. And is it, if you can find out, and then what is the extent of the loss and the risk for the Guardian Fund? Have you got it quantified? And if you can link to that, which is another huge issue, and that is the previous TBVC countries, pre-94, have you quantified that risk and loss yet? Sorry, Chair, it's a whole lot of issues. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Didi, thanks for the presentation. You know, the qualified audit, unqualified audit sound good. Otherwise, it's a little bit difficult to measure what's really happening. I note that with the MTSF objective regarding the deceased and insolvent estates and the Guardians Fund, that you haven't really given us input on the outputs and the progress with the key performance indicators, and we need that. I mean, what's the point of having them? I know that there was talk of revising them, but if you haven't revised them, they still stand. And just to highlight them, it was improve access to probate services, wills, trusts, estates, capacitate at least one magisterial court per district to deliver probate services. How far are you with that? Finalize all estates within 4 months. You dealt with that to some extent, but how far? I mean, what percentage of estates worth less than 125,000 are finalized? Guardians Fund. Ensure that 80% of the beneficiaries receive services within 40 days. You almost gave us the impression that everybody was receiving the payout within 40 days. What's the actual percentage? And is there a provincial breakdown so we can see if there's a particular province where there's a problem? And then finalize all matters regarding insolvency within 15 months of registration. So I'm a bit disappointed that we haven't got, I mean, if this is the quarterly report, this is what we would be expecting to get a response on. The rest, with respect, is a little bit of fluff. It looks good. We're making so much money, etc. But if we're really told you accountable, we need to measure you against your key performance indicators. So that's one. Then the vacancies. What is the actual position? You've got, we would, 20, annual report of the monies in trust in the Guardians Fund says the master's branch has 1,174 posts. There's then going to be a project to have 600 vacant posts, fill 600 vacant posts. You haven't told us what is the vacancy at the moment. Can we get that? Then, the issue of access to the master, okay, there is this question. We need to know the rollout of the probate services. But, Chair, it's a bit difficult. I mean, you only pick it up, and maybe it's something we should be taking up with our constituency offices. I mean, I had a horrific case, which Mr. Basson knows about from a few years back, of a guardian in Bergville, minor in Bergville, who wasn't paid for years. And they kept wanting him to go down to Pietermaritzburg as opposed to helping him in Bergville. Now, I don't know if those cases are still the same. One issue with the slightly separate issue is there any information sharing between the Guardians Fund and SASA? In other words, can a person who has quite a substantial amount of money in the Guardians Fund for them, a minor, can their guardian also be receiving a foster care grant? And is there any exchange of information? Is it possible for double claims? Last question then is the issue I understood with insolvencies was around the process of who gets selected, and you haven't really given us, that always seemed to be the main problem, allegations that there was corruption, favoritism, that there wasn't a spread to black attorneys. What's happening with the spread of the insolvency work? Last point then I think everybody really knows it. To my mind, generally estates are not complicated. People should not need attorneys. But you go into to register an estate, particularly in Cape Town, they want an attorney. Okay. You don't get the help that you would expect. And my argument would be, when you complete a tax return, you don't have to get a tax consultant. The receiver will help you. On your website, it's quite nicely laid out as to what you need to do when you go and report an estate, what documents do you need, etc., etc. But after you've reported it, complete blank. Okay. And those steps are fairly basic of a liquidation and distribution account, advertising, etc., etc. But basically, there was a master's directive, that you needed an attorney. That was being interpreted here, that you needed an attorney. And I mean, I where this is coming from is I had to do my mother's estate, which was a small estate of about 400,000. The executive fees, if there had been an attorney, and luckily I got help from officials, particularly Mr. Basson, but the executive fees would have been 17,000 for nothing. Mm. Now, why on smaller estates must, you know, attorneys be given money for something which actually the state should be providing? So what are you doing to make it more accessible is basically the question, that it can be a similar situation to SARS where the master's office will help you. Obviously, if there's complicated legal issues, if there are disputes, then the master should be in entitled to say you need an attorney. But generally, you shouldn't. I think it's a waste of money. So what are you doing with as far as that is concerned?
Thank you. One question, and that is, please, a reaction or a report back on the master of the Cape Town High Court, Zarina Agulis, who in the colourful description of the legal columnist Carmel Ricard, rather than obeying a very precise court order made against her, gave the judges the finger, and of course she did it twice. She felt that she could interpret the judgment and pay Mr. Klopper just as much as she had decided to pay him in the first place. The descriptions in the judgment of Ms. Agulis are likewise colourful and quite shocking. She was in the last instance described as having acted with gross impropriety and in fact unlawfully, and punitive costs were awarded against her. Now my question to you is the same asked by the columnist. Surely something like this should provoke her bosses to ask what the hell, I quote, she thought she was doing, and then the questions to be followed by surely dismissal. So may we know why Master Agulis remains in place, or whether she remains in place.
Thank you, Kevin. Just a few simple questions. On the slide number 2, where you say some of the functions are inter alia those, then you say to invest money held with the PIC. What does that mean? Because I thought you were investing money with the PIC. So these are monies already, you are investing monies with the PIC.
I think it's the wrong thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So small issues then. On slide C, you say the fund has been plagued by a number of issues, and I suppose those issues are those listed on 5. Staff capacity constraints, skills shortage, and so on. But don't tell us what is it that you are doing to deal with these challenges. And slide 8, under volume, there's interest, there's commission, there's no interest. Then well, what is the commission about? Who gets the commission and for what? And then on slide 13, the last sentence there talks about money being handed over, paid over to the National Revenue Fund. Yeah, it did indicate that this is for purposes of ensuring that when times are hard, the National Revenue Fund is able to come to rescue. But what would you need that kind of assistance for? Why can't you keep the monies the way you are already keeping them? Why is it necessary for these monies to be handed over to the National Revenue Fund? I presume that in any event, the Department of Justice does pay the salaries of the people working in the master's office. So that's my question. And on page 4, on slide 14, Chairperson, they indicated that there's a decline in the use of trust. And the DG mentioned that maybe it's because of the changes in legislation and tax systems that are being put in place. Well, what are the people that used to use trust using now instead of the trust? I think there's just two last more Chairperson. On slide 21, my understanding has been that the magistrate offices or magistrates themselves have been used as centers where people get the services of the masters. What is the position? Is that still the case? Or are people all flocking to the masters' offices now? And also, on communication of your services. The traditional countries, I don't see you mentioning them here. And yet, traditional leaders, on a daily basis, they go to these offices assisting beneficiaries of the fund. What is the relationship with those people in ensuring that indeed your services become accessible to the intended beneficiaries? Thank you, Chairperson.
DG? Put in your hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. this is the time where I count on my colleagues for support. Thank you. I'll try and pick up some of the questions, and my colleagues will help in answering the difficult ones. So let me deal with the last set of questions.
Is this the level of capturing of documents? I mean, in the past, there was a problem that documents were not being computerized. You have a fire at the master's office, you will have a complete disaster. What's the position now as far as the computerization, you can call it that?
Okay. Thank you very much, and honorable members. Let me start with the very last question, the capturing of documentation. We have the project, not just in the master's office, but specifically in the master's office as well, where we capture the documents. It's not without challenges, that project. It definitely has its own challenges, but broadly speaking, we are capturing the documents. The idea is at the first entry point where a person goes to, remember that I spoke about the 402 centers earlier, when the person goes there, the first thing that must happen is that once they've applied and all of that, the documents must be captured there electronically and must be mailed electronically to the central office. So there is that aspect of the capturing. There is also, you'd recall that I said we are now reporting more in real time. So some of the ICMS project is, amongst others, assisting us with the capturing of people's files. But are we there yet? Certainly not. We are not there yet, but it's one investment area that we need to get to. So that investment area, maybe just to explain this thing a little more, has to do with on the one level, the document management strategy, which is capturing and keeping documents off-site. The second has to do with the people that must do the capturing. And the third, well, in fact, there's a third, that the IT system must work, your scanners and everything. And right now, this is the one area when I was giving a presentation earlier, I said the biggest investment that we still need is in the IT because of precisely those issues. Our operations are struggling in most areas where we are out of warranty and we are struggling just with the money to make good with that. But having said that, there are initiatives in that. In fact, not so long ago, I think it was Dr. De Vere, you'll assist me with the explanation here. We approved the redirection of funds in February, if not March, where, amongst others, the biggest chunk of those funds, I think we made a saving of about 180 million of the redirected funds. And the biggest portion, which was about 50 million, was related to just the scanning, the document management. It was related to supporting the document management system throughout the department, but that will also include the masters. So indeed, there is an investment towards that. The second question around the communication, so I think this is one area where sometimes we are doing good work, which we do most of the time, but we are just our own worst enemies, one in identifying our own stakeholders correctly. And I think the more I come to the portfolio committee, the more I learn about most of our stakeholders, and I appreciate that. But it's one area where, in fact, right now as a department, we are developing a stakeholder identification strategy so that we know who our stakeholders is, so that we don't go to everybody else and leave a very fundamental and a very basic stakeholder that we could reach almost on at the touch of a button. So we are very weak on that. We take all blame for that, but we are fixing it. The issues around whether people have to go to the central offices, which are the six footprint areas that I spoke to earlier, not anymore. People can go to these 402 service centers that I spoke to, which are associated with Project so we've got those service points, which is why people can access those service points, and what we are working towards is just tightening that process so that everyone knows that they can go there as and when they have an issue to raise. And the central offices will then deal with the broader related issues. The issues of trust and decline of trust, of the usage of the instrument of trust, I would be speculating, say, if I gave you the exact reason why people are not using them anymore. We are just speculating that it could be changes in legislation and tax and all of the related issues. But I will not even venture to tell you what else are they now using. That information, I think we will have to go back and find out what exactly are they using in today's terms. Money is paid over to the revenue fund. That is a difficult question, sir. We've got legislation that requires, in fact, there are two things. The starting point is that monies in the Guardian Fund monies is not our money, not our money. And because it's not our money, we can't have access to it. So we pay all services because we budget and we get money from government to pay all services that service the Guardian Fund, but we don't use that money to run the office, if I may use it that way. Now, the question was, why are we not keeping that money and not paying it over to the revenue fund, national revenue fund? I think it's just a sheer matter of law and accounting and that requires us to do that. The issue of commission, who receives or gets paid commission. If we go back to the slide, please find the slide. If we go back to the slide, commission, I spoke to, you have three categories of people. Your first category of beneficiaries, the first category of beneficiaries is those that we receive money for and we pay with interest. The second layer of beneficiaries is creditors. I call them creditors. Those that do not come and collect their money. And that money is kept by the fund for untold number of years or months or, at a time. We don't pay those people money. When we do, when they do show up, whenever they do, we then charge them 5%. Well, is it 5%? We then charge them 5% interest. So that commission is commission just for us holding their monies and servicing their account as and when we pay them. Now, the creditors only, not your average beneficiary. And perhaps you want to explain that further? Okay, all right. Then the next question was, we told you about the number of challenges, but we didn't tell the committee about the interventions we are bringing to bear. And maybe we should have done that, and my apology, because when you don't think very quickly. Two things are happening. I've already spoken to the IT side and the investments that we've done and the document management, so we've spoken to that issue, so I will not respond to that. On the people side, the current vacancies right now, we are at 14% vacancy rate, which is a very big rate. But we are also perhaps, and this is where you have to talk not just to the master's issue or the Guardian Fund issue, but you have to talk to the departmental issues in broad terms. We've slowed down in filling vacancies in general terms. Not that we want to, but we've slowed down in general terms because we are really struggling financially, seriously struggling financially. That is why we have had to go back to Treasury to ask for additional funds, because we're struggling. So that is one reason. The other reason is that we do bring people in, but they migrate very quickly. What we need to do for the benefits of the committee is that Monday next week, we can provide the committee with the statistics of where we are with the vacancies and everything else. And my apology, we should have done that. So please can you note that. But this question is also linked to the question that was raised earlier. And maybe let me stop here and allow my colleagues to deal with the balance of the questions, and I'll come back to the interventions later. I don't know whether you want to start.
Chairperson, thank you. If I can start at the top with the issue on the liquidation industry. The process or the key solution to the challenges that we've been facing was the minister's policy on the appointment of liquidators. That policy document has been compiled. We are in a process within the department of having submitted it to the Exco of the department, And the department now has got an EXCO subcommittee on policy development. That policy has served before the subcommittee, and there are stakeholder interactions and consultations taking place later this month. With in the policy, the principles are addressed, and in the master's directive that goes with it, a practical unpacking of that principles are then done. The consultation process is structured, and once the input from stakeholders are complete, the policy will then be ready for the minister and then submission through the processes. If I understand correctly, it will have to be brought to this house for final approval. But the process is well advanced and currently receiving attention. In the interim, we have been ensuring that in every liquidation or insolvent estate, a previously disadvantaged person is appointed. They are appointed on a roster system, and there's a record kept of those appointments. In some instances, the information is even published on the internet on certain websites where people can access that information, particularly with regards to the series of appointments that have been made. The investment at PIC at yielding 8.5%, that I think is, linked to the type of instruments and the value of the investments made at the time by the Public Investment Commissioner. There's a detailed analysis of these investment portfolios, which obviously is on an ever-changing basis as some investments mature. But the longest span of a particular investment would be no more than 12 months. I think predominantly the money market has been used, and then some other financial instruments where there's very limited risk. The objective is not to maximize investment. The objective is to deal with the money in a conservative manner. The losses and theft and fraud and the record kept of challenges, it's an area that's closely monitored during the audit process. There's an accurate list of fraud and losses and action taken in that regard. It will be part of the annual financial statement. Exact detail can be gleaned from that and can be made available. The question on the TBBC losses, the current amount that it's also reflected in our annual financial statement is around 47 million, 45 million, and the figure predominantly includes a loss, if I can call it that, because the children of the TBBC states were placed in the same position as their counterparts elsewhere in the Republic. There is an element of irregularity that has taken place, and the proper disciplinary processes and loss recovery processes is underway, and in many instances have been finalized. I wonder whether the Honourable Member Swart will remember us meeting in Mafikeng a few years ago. That person has been found guilty, and the sentencing process will take place during November. The wheels of justice finally has found the person. I'm just reminding you of the processes actually today. The sentencing is to be handed down, but the conviction has been announced. I think I apologize to the extent that the information directly relating to the quarterly report, the MTSF, has not been properly presented. I have misunderstood the brief, and I can assure you that the first quarter report is available, and we can present that and make it. It's just that I think the focus of the presentation from my side was wrong. I apologize for that. The access. My colleague, Mr. Johnson, will speak further to that TVEC shortfall. The access to justice services, which was, of course, initially confined to the 6 master's offices, now at 14 master's offices, and then finally with the available IT system has been advanced to 402 magistrates' offices, where justice services or master's offices, what we call probate services, can be accessed. If time allows, I'm live on this system. I can remember 2 or 3 years ago I wanted to show you what's happening in Umtata, and I couldn't. Today I can. I can show you. In fact, we can see the matters as they are registered. I will come back to that just now when we deal about the IT further. The Guardian Fund payments within 40 days. Again, in the past, one in the Master's Office had to extensively rely on manual information. Today, we can read from our electronic system exactly when was the matter captured and when was the check processed, and we are measuring the turnaround times in terms of the electronic assistance available. The level of capturing documents and the computerization, I'm extremely excited, and I really would like to show the house that as an estate is registered, the reporting documents like the death notice, the inventory, the letters of appointment is generated by the system at the back end. So on the front end we are capturing information, and at the back end these documents are generated, which will mean that we are very close to an e-filing situation on the one hand, and on the other hand the file might be missing, but the document information is captured in a format that we do understand, which means we have advanced substantially towards having these documents in electronic format. The information sharing between the Guardians Fund and the social services, there's a very close interaction in terms of beneficiary determination, and especially family structures and caregivers in the event of orphans. There's a daily close interaction between social services and the masters. What we've not yet achieved is the level of sharing more information, such as who are our beneficiary lists, and to what extent do that correlate with the beneficiary listing or the recipients of grants. It's an area that I will definitely flag and work on, because the information is available electronic. It's a matter of matching and analyzing. Can I rattle on? Thank you. The attorney in an estate, we do take care. There is a master's directive, a chief master's directive, that indicates that where a person indicates that he or she will be doing the estate themselves, the necessity be away. I will definitely take heed of the issue that we should make it even clearer that we should not insist on attorneys unless there's an absolute need for it.
But and put on the website
Don't just stop with what you have to do when you report the estate, but put the steps on the website. And then have, maybe it's a starting problem. SARS officials help you with your tax return. Masters office officials, with respect, generally don't.
I think the point is well taken, that we will definitely enhance the use of our website. I have the actual figures available for August, which indicates that 36,000 people accessed, mainly in the area of forms, and then it would really reduce inquiries on our part if we were to just enhance that area. And it can be done, I think, at low cost or at no cost, actually. I will definitely report back and show developments. What in that area? The issue of Mrs. Sagalas in the Cape Town office, I assure the House that the disciplinary process has been done and appropriate disciplinary matters have done. I don't want to disclose it as it relates to an individual, but I can make more available if necessary. But you can rest assured the matter was addressed. It was unacceptable. You're welcome. It's unacceptable. We do not accept it. The department took swift action. I can give you that assurance. Just on the decline on the use of trust, which the committee might find interesting, there has been at some point in time extensive use made of trusts in joint and communal land ownership situations. Those proved to be particularly cumbersome as trustees usurp power and decisions, and it creates very difficult control environment because controls in a trust is not at all equivalent to companies and close corporations. The current tendency would be to go for the communal based CBA, Communal Property Act, the Communal Property Act, and which better regulates that situation. But trust really is a matter that's directly linked to the economy and all sorts of private planning and structuring, and with that as alternatives. I am not aware of an aspect that is not addressed.
The 125,000 estate, 18 18, the question is related to the Law Reform Commission report in August 2018 expressed concern about 80% of your estate are those, and whether steps are being taken by miners from that relatively informal process. That was the one, and then the Chief Master's directive by streamlining procedures. The Law Society asked whether that was done. I was going to suggest, I don't with respect feel that either from the DG or from the Acting Chief Master, my question on the progress with the output has been responded to. What I would suggest is, can we get it in writing? So I think that would be better than another attempt now with the other stuff. So I really would like to know how far you're going out with rollout per magistrate court, as it were. So that you need to come back with. And then, the others are sort of more statistical. I would suggest you come back to us to do that.
I am happy with that. I just wanted to add one small rider that We had provided that information in the quarterly report, but we will now go pay, because even in the quarterly report we did not segment and do a complete breakdown. But that's what I was checking, and my apologies. What we had done, because we had just come to Parliament with a quarterly report, we didn't then do the breakdown in this report because we thought we had already covered that. So I think that there is the miscommunication, but we will come back, full breakdown. I take full responsibility for that.
He wasn't here for the quarterly report. It wasn't her fault. But I don't think it was attention given on the master.
Okay, all
right. Thank you. I'm a new member. I just want to know, why did the annual report only after 2009? When it's already over 2010? When is it going to come? It's just done. So why is it only? What I'm saying is we just finalized the financial year. We will be taking, this is the month of taking, we'll be taking the
Anyone?
Yes.
It
yes.
Yes. Has to be tabled by the end of September in terms of the FMA, so it's not actually due yet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The
cycle will always go. I mean, COPA in particular keeps saying it can't be new something.
And maybe we could ask the Honourable Gorman if she could be attached to them.
Yes, another small question from me. Are you able to determine the number of the actual beneficiaries of this fund, especially with regard to deceased trustees? And am I correct to think that the lesser the amount, the more beneficiaries tend to be, and the bigger the amount, the less number of beneficiaries.
Jake, can I have another go at answering the issue of small estates and the vulnerable in small estates? The agreement with Legal Aid South Africa is that whenever the master or the clerk functioning at the service point, at this 402 service point, come across a situation where a minor is at risk, there's a referral of that matter to Legal Aid South Africa, who even can administer that estate as executor. So the Legal Aid South Africa is coming in to protect the claims that person might have in terms of maintenance and other claims, third party fund or compensation commissioner, whatever type of claim the minor might have, as well as the administration of that estate. Obviously subject to the means test and then subject to them recovering as if they were performing this estate. It's a major eradication of the risk. It's a major achievement. I think it's one of the biggest moments to me in my career when those vulnerable people are now protected by a structured institution. And in the past, we were relying on pro bono activities and assistance, which did not really do the protection as we would have. The functioning of the Chief Master's Directive to make the examination and assistance with liquidation and distribution accounts easier is subject to the whole change of the wording of Section 35. It's a matter that's on the legislation amendment, as we mentioned, that would do. But the turnaround times in terms of examining liquidation and distribution accounts are really well within expectations. The number of beneficiaries, where in the Guardians Fund, we know every individual beneficiary by name, date, place and address. Where deceased estates are administered, we are not aware. We are confident that with those vulnerable children in small estates where the Legal Aid South Africa will be assisting, the matter will be much better controlled. but there is no accurate list of beneficiaries kept, although it can be determined from the documentation that is submitted to the master's offices. There is no list, but where there are vulnerable people and where there are minors involved, that information is well dealt with.
I can make copies of the agreement available and the reports on actual transactions dealt with and done. We do have an accurate record of our interaction. The system has been used, the referral system in Bloemfontein, for more than a year now, and then it's currently rolled out throughout the system. The legal aid, the Laws of Legal Aid South Africa centers how they are structured. Yeah. I can make a copy of the agreement available.
Seems to me like we're done with business over there. Okay. We're going to Mthatha now, thanks to the request by Ngosi.
I can see that they end yesterday at estate number. You weren't able to read, I'm sure. 5597. I can see they've done 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 estates this morning. If I were to look at this particular estate is of a person who passed away in Lady Freer. The person died on the 30th of April 2006. The matter is only reported today. The information that has been captured, for those who are familiar with master's forms, will recognize this document, which is the death notice. In other words, as they were actually capturing a deceased estate, we have the reporting documents on that matter now electronically available, which means it will never be lost. That file won't be missing anymore. It also now creates the opportunity for the master, although the transaction took place in Lady Freer, to look at what is the situation. The person died, a single person, with this information, and then enable us eventually to do supervision and control of the activity from a distance.
That's fine. I don't know what to see you often in the field.
Thank you very much. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of us, and with those who are traveling, bon voyage. And thank you very much. Meeting closed.
Thank you.